Good morning.
Good morning.
Everybody's all right today? Are you worried about the world? Should you be? Only two people to answer. I'm worried about the world. Wow, you know. I keep asking the Lord, maybe I should just skip this part. I was a little disjointed, I admit, in the homily yesterday, and I'll only try to be half as disjointed today. How many people watch The Chosen? Wow. You should try to watch that. Yeah? Do you have a zeal for God in your life? Are you confident about the world such as it is? Do you have a zeal for the Lord, you see? I think that's what's itching me, and I just don't know how to scratch that itch. Maybe that's a good thing, right? How does Paul start with today? The love of Christ impels us. Paul was a man gripped by grace. His life really was radically transformed. And maybe it's because I've been watching some of the episodes in Chosen. It is a little hard to find. You have to have Netflix or some streaming. It is a little hard to find, I admit that. But it's a good program. Chosen, Jesus, of course. And it's a reenact of the opportunity or the resources on your TV or streaming to do that. You think you'd be blessed. I think there's 7 seasons. They're into season 4 now. So the gospel today really picks up from where we were last Sunday. Last Sunday, you will recall that it was about the seeds, right? And that the farmer, he planted the seeds, he prepared the soil, and other than that, he had no idea how that seed was going to come up, but it did. The seed, of course, is the seed of faith. And that seed cannot grow without God. The seed is an image of faith. And as powerful, and I mean powerful, as this baptism is going to be on that boy's head, George Timothy, his faith is going to depend on you, Nathan, and on you, Sarah, by the way you love each other, and by the way that in some way, however that's going to be in your house, how you're going to pray, how you're going to interact, he'll come to know Christ himself. There's a lot of tension in the world, and some of us are worried about that, and some aren't, and that's a good, I wasn't worried so much, but I guess I am, but I pray, and I pray God's will. So today's gospel follows immediately what we read. And if you remember the verse from last Sunday, the last verse from last Sunday, I know you probably do it because you thought about it all week, right? He spoke to them only in parables, but for the disciples, he taught them privately. He's teaching them privately on the lake. And I guess this whole agitation is really coming, why are you terrified? Do you not have faith? Can you really just at times feel the agitation in Jesus? I mean, the guy was just as human as you and I, right? But he didn't have the burden of sin because there was a clarity of divinity in him. But you understand, he could not come out and simply say, you know what, guys, let me cut to the chase. I'm the Christ. I'm the Messiah that you've been waiting for 800 years or 1,000 years, whatever. I'm him. So let's just get that out of the way and you guys start believing. Wouldn't have worked, right? I mean, half of them would have laughed, chuckle, chuckle. Half of them, well, probably a third would have believed him. There's about a third of the world is Catholic. Christian, I mean. God's not Catholic. And a third would probably want to kill him. And the other third probably said, eh, so. But he's teaching the disciples. Now, because I've been watching The Chosen since it began in the four seasons, the question comes, you can understand that it must have been quite a challenge to hang around with a man like Jesus, who is God, right? On the one hand, you're immediately inspired with awe by his words and the power of his deeds. And the next minute, you're dumbfounded and really overwhelmed by the power of this man that you simply can't deny, but you're totally confused by. That's the mystery of God, you see. It's awesome, and there's an awestruck reverence, but at times it's overwhelming. But on the other hand, it's tangibly real, and it's very touchable, because he speaks transforming words of hope and freedom that give new life, and he works deeds. He lets the blind see and the deaf hear, and he raised from the dead. Raises people from the dead, etc. He forgives them. He gives them new life and hope. Jesus had the capacity to expose the deepest parts of ourselves, of our fears, the fears of human nature. And at the same time, he had the calming power to relieve those fears for those who would yield and put their faith in him, because his deeds and words begged to be believed. But in the time of Jesus, as in our time, the world so impinges upon us. We tend to think about the realities that are around us that make us nervous or agitated or get in our way or simply bother us. But consider the zeal of Jesus, who humbled himself to take on the trials and the limitations of humanity, a person with skin and a body and emotions and all the rest, but who was God. The Bible is not a history book. It's not simply historical facts. It's a book written in faith. It has history. Some of the realities are quite literally true historically, but they're always written in the eyes and the light of faith. And so we're seeing that in this reading today, right after the parables of faith and the seeds. And there's still going to be signs and figures of speech that mean more than the words express. Notice that as the day turns to dusk, getting to be dark, it's getting to be night. It is true in our time, but probably more true in the time of Jesus, but still true in our time, that things like wind and storms and the sea, ocean, the oceans, and darkness are hold or carry a certain primordial fear, a primal fear, even in our time. Where in New York, you know, the city never rests because the lights are on all the time, and who can be afraid of the dark? Just turn the light on. But there's still those primal fears of the unknown and the scary, the unseen, in sea and water and wind and darkness. So when Mark is telling us that the day turns to dusk, maybe that refers to the darkness or the absence of understanding in the disciples. So Jesus says to them, clearly on layered meaning, let's cross over to the other side. It's a figure of speech. It doesn't simply mean, let's go to the other side of the lake because there's a McDonald's over there and I left my jacket there. I got to get my jacket and I'm hungry. I'll buy you guys dinner. He was saying to the disciples, teaching them privately, Let's go to the other side of understanding. I need you, my closest followers, to come to a deeper understanding of who I am and what I'm about and what you are to be about as believers and followers of me. So again, he has the task, Jesus does, of teaching the disciples of who he is without a direct statement. And this encounter with the water and the sea does exactly that. Oh, it's been several centuries now. But believe it or not, early in the church, maybe even the first 1,000 years of the church, before the strength of institutional religion took over, particularly at the time of the Lutheran Reformation 500 years ago, people automatically or more naturally knew Jesus in their hearts. But we've come to learn faith through our heads, right? We get to be second grade, and we go to catechism, and we learn from books who Jesus is and how to believe and follow his way. And that's a good thing. It's a necessary thing. It's an important thing. But it's simply presumed that it'll find its way to our hearts. To that extent, the first disciples had the advantage because they could see with their own eyes and feel with their own emotions the terror and the trauma and the blessing and the awesomeness of the power of the man Jesus. We can't just learn Christ through religious teaching. So it's these kinds of encounters. We all have inner storms, do we not? We have fears and losses, sometimes death of loved ones, disruption of health, difficult finances, inflation, the price of gas, politics. We all have things to worry about. Now notice the contrast, intentionally written this way as a tension of faith, the contrast between Jesus and the disciples in this boat, in this storm. Now, these guys were fishermen. They knew these things happened all the time. On the one side of the Sea of Galilee, I was there. I think they would call the mountains, or there's big hills. But on the other side, there's a flat plain. On the other side of that's called the sea. It's not that big. It's not half the size of Lake Michigan. But that those hills there, those mountains, caused the winds would come up and they'd come down those hills and there would be frequent, regular storms. It would stir up the lake. But Jesus is there. Do you really think he brought a pillow with him? He was in the boat on a cushion, asleep. Mark, the gospel writer, is telling us the contrast. In this stormy boat, don't get seasick, he's sleeping on a cushion, so comfortable and peaceful. Whereby the disciples, on the other hand, they're terrified. They're fishermen. They've seen this before. It's an inner storm. And now it's like, well, how can this guy be sleeping? He's driving us crazy. He does all these wonderful and powerful things. He speaks like nobody else speaks. He does these things. And now we're out here and he's sleeping? What's wrong with this guy? What would you say? I mean, in your human skin, what would you say about that? Maybe they were afraid of waking him up because he doesn't wake up well. No, it's like, don't you care, they say? Don't you care that we're perishing here? So he wakes up and simply says, quiet, be still. And he wasn't talking to the disciples. He was talking to the sea, the wind. And it became calm. Now, he did not have to say at that moment, I am the Christ. Because they could see. And then their fear took a different tone, didn't it? Now they're awestruck in astonishment. Who is this then that even the wind and the sea obey him? Because they knew it was their mind and it should be ours as well. They knew that God alone and God alone is the only one that could calm the wind and the seas. Those primordial fears of human nature. And Jesus calms them. But the message, you see, of course, is for all of us. We all have at times inner storms. It's universal for all humanity. Unexpected times of chaos and uncertainty and fear and loss, bereavement and grief and other tragedies and difficulties. And it can feel like the disciples felt, that God was absent or uncaring. Don't you care that we're about to be perish and drowned? Jesus has revealed himself, not in clear words, but in clear action. And the invitation is to believe. So as time goes on and these debates come with the politics and all of that, remember, God's still in the world. And if you don't know how to vote, and I'll never tell you how to vote, that's up to you. But you know the old wristband, WWJD? What would Jesus do? Who would Jesus vote for? If that's bothering you and you're getting all tense about it, what would Jesus do? Now that might seem like an imposition on this reflection. But you see, people are agitated and not inappropriately. Inflation is hurting a lot of people. But the whole world is suffering with inflation. It's not just our country, it's the whole world, you see. Jesus is talking about the whole world. And the point is, where is your faith? Do you not yet believe? Ours is to believe in Jesus. So regardless of which one of our candidates, if they end up being the candidates, regardless of who gets voted in, God's still going to be God. And in some way, as you know, I say, you pray God's will. And if the person you don't like gets in, somehow maybe it's God's will. And if the person that I don't like gets in, well, then I have to surrender to the same thing. God's still in charge. Because we don't believe in whoever gets elected, right? We believe in God. So that's the call. And the call inevitably will come with fears and the chaotic challenges of admitting the invitation to a necessary surrender. I can't figure it out. I can't fix it all, and neither can you. God is the one in charge. A lot of times, humanly, it's pretty common that emotionally we can withdraw and hide and we deny the weight of the concerns that surround us. But that doesn't mean God isn't here. It doesn't mean God isn't, you know, bearing the divine influence, whether we'd like what's going on or not. God's still God and God's still in charge. But it's not easy to relax in today's world unless you just ignore it all. We're all burdened by various degrees of stress and anxiety. A new baby in the house, and you got to kind of get up and get the jobs done and change the diapers. And, you know, are there worries in your lives? Please don't say no. Because then confessions aren't until next Saturday. It's a tough world. But we have Christ, and God's in charge. If you're having an inner storm, pray. If it feels like God is absent, pray more. Because he's not. He's always present. The irony, of course, is that Jesus knows, and in these very moments is preparing himself for his own storm when he would be put on the cross. And then he, going through the storms of his own life, could say to his Father, on the one hand, not my will, your will be done. And on the other hand, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Perhaps with St. Paul, we can use his line, let us be impelled by the love of Christ. If your life is stressed and worried and you're much more inclined to fuss and worry and complain, think of Jesus. The world does not need any more bad breath of complaining. The world can be a lot better off with a lot more praise and worship, gratitude, glory, and honor to the Lord our God. For Christ has died, Christ is risen, and Christ will come again. Thank you, God, for Jesus Christ.